This podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network. Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 390. Hey, closing in on that episode 400 milestone, getting closer, just 10 episodes away. Folks, this is a practical show. I'm a practical everyday guy. I am just a salesman. I'm just a Yankee with a gun. You know, I was born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. I've been living in Texas a long time. Nice, gun-friendly, free state of Texas. But I'm pretty much just an everyday guy. Salesman by trade, just having fun with shooting. And I take my Second Amendment rights very seriously. So for this 390th episode, I have a cool interview with you. And I'm going to talk about that interview. An interview for you. And I'm going to talk about that special person, that special guest, here in just a minute. So the two topics are going to be the interview, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about some different guns that I have been messing around with, and kind of give you a little bit of a full circle perspective on testing out a lot of guns, and that's going to be fun. Now, let's start with the interview. How many of you are parents? I had a chance to interview my son recently, and he's 18. And this is the first time. It's the first time that I've interviewed any of my family members on the Handgun World podcast. I did not tell my son what the questions were going to be. I just told him that I wanted to do an interview with him for the Handgun World podcast. I wanted to kind of see what his mindset is on firearms at age 18. And he's still a senior in high school, and I wanted to find out what his mindset was. So at home one day, I decided to interview him. This is a pretty revealing interview. I learned some things here about what's going on in my son's head. There's some things I'm a little concerned about, and there's some things I'm real happy about. So here we go. Well, I am interviewing a very special guest on this episode, a very special guest, a guest that I've never had on the Handgun World podcast before. I'm interviewing my son, Spencer. Hey, son, welcome to the show.
Hello. I've never actually been on a podcast before, but this is a really good first experience, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and I'm looking forward to it also. So your dad carries a gun every day, and I've been talking for 7 years to people on this podcast about it. So how do you feel about that? What do you think about your dad carrying a gun every day?
Well, if we ever get mugged, I am pretty confident that we'll be able to protect ourselves better than somebody who didn't have a gun.
Well, that's true. And tell everybody how old you are.
18 years.
So you're 18 years old, and now you're pretty accomplished in martial arts. Most people know that. So you feel if we get attacked, if we're out there, something happens, who is it that we can't call and rely on?
Well, obviously, if you call 911, the cops will probably take like 2 or 5 minutes to get there. And though, of course, if you're ever in any other emergency or somebody else is being attacked, you probably might want, if a place is being attacked or you see something suspicious, you probably do want to call the cops. But yeah, if something in the immediate vicinity is about to hurt you, calling a cop is not going to work.
And not only is it not going to work, but, you know, I mean, it just, even if it did work, I don't think there's a chance for any police officer to get there quick enough unless they just happen to be on scene. Do you ever have a chance, Sammy, to talk to any of your friends about any of this kind of stuff?
Not at all.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because most people are not really interested in guns or haven't really touched a gun in their life.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way a lot of young people grow up. How do you like it when we go out shooting?
Well, other than the loud bangs and the fact that we run out of ammo pretty quickly, it's actually pretty fun.
You know, all of my guns and even your gun, they all have that terrible problem, and that is they run out of ammo.
I think due to the fact that it's really fun, we end up using it all.
Do you think we could call the manufacturer and tell them that the guns have a problem because they're running out of ammo?
I think that's our problem.
You don't think they'd buy that, huh?
No.
So you have fun shooting?
I definitely have fun shooting.
What do you like about shooting?
Well, basically, it's a great stress reliever, and you also it's kind of like a sport where you try and see how accurate you can be. Plus, it's also really fun to hear a loud bang after you pull a trigger and destroy a piece of paper.
Destroying a piece of paper, yeah. But the paper doesn't really fight back much, does it?
It just stays there.
Do you think that, getting serious here for a minute, you know, you said that in case we're attacked, you know, you feel like if you're with me carrying a gun, you feel a little bit better about it. You know, in the house here, you're perfectly old enough and perfectly legal to be able to use a gun if somebody were to break in here and try to do us harm. How do you feel about that?
Well, I've shot guns pretty much before, and it's easier to hit hit a mugger at like 10 yards away than 30 yards away, like I always shoot. So it'll pretty much be much easier to defend myself than it is, though it is harder to hit a moving target, so there is that.
And how do you feel about using that deadly force against somebody if I'm not here?
You know, if they really don't deserve it or if they're not trying to attack me, it's not really a problem. However, if it's a matter of life or death, I see no problem in using it against another person.
Yeah, so you'd get your gun and you'd use it, wouldn't you?
If I have to, though, I hope it never comes to that.
Well, I hope it never comes to that either, and we all hope it never comes to that. Let's talk about the fun of shooting again. You said, you know, you like the loud bang, you like destroying pieces of paper and things like that. Last time we went shooting, you shot some steel, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
How'd you like shooting steel targets?
Well, it's a really good ego booster if you hit the steel a lot.
Why is that?
Because it makes you feel superior to other people when they're shooting.
How does it make you? You mean when you hear that big clang and when you hit that big, you know, gong noise when you hit the steel?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Kind of gives you that feeling of confidence, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So, you know, I know a lot of people your age don't talk a lot about guns and things like that, but why do you think that is?
Well, because most people have never really been in a perilous situation, but very few people have ever gotten mugged. And very few people in those people's families have ever gotten mugged, because our society is a civilized society, and in a civilized society, many people rarely feel the need to carry.
Well, I feel the need to carry every day. Do you really think that it's, with all the craziness and all the crazy shootings and things like that and the terrorist attacks been going on, do you really think it's as civilized as you might think?
Well, most of those stories take place in the U.S., and the U.S. has over 250 million people in it. And when you have that many people, something like that's bound to happen somewhere in the country, but it's very unlikely that it'll ever happen to you.
Well, it's actually got we have a little over 300 million people, and you're right, it's very unlikely. The chances of us actually having to use our gun is not very high, but those of us who are real serious about it, when that time comes, we want to make sure that we're prepared and have that weapon, don't we?
Yes.
Now, you're 18, a little over 18. When you turn 21, are you going to want to carry?
Definitely.
Why?
Well, because I, for one, am not comfortable with knowing that I can't defend myself if somebody with a knife or something comes on to me.
Yeah. And your martial arts skills may only go so far.
Of course, if they catch you by surprise or even it, they could just cut you really hard and it'll probably really hurt.
And even so, you know, you want to have you want to have a chance at life. It's kind of like your right to life, isn't it?
Yes.
So you're going to carry when you turn 21. So you got about a little less than 3 years to start getting prepared for that. What is it that you think is, you know, what kind of a feeling is it going to give you to be able to carry when you're old enough to do so?
It's not going to really feel that much different. Although, if I open carry, I'll probably get some dirty looks, but concealed carry is fine.
Are you going to try to open carry someday?
Probably not. I don't want to advertise that I have a gun.
Ah, good. And by the way, folks that are listening to this, this is a totally impromptu interview. I didn't even tell my son any of this that I was going to ask him. And he hasn't actually been listening to a lot of my podcasts lately anyway. So these are some quite interesting revelations. So how come you don't want to advertise to people that you have a gun?
Well, it may make some, first of all, make some people feel on edge, and I don't want anybody to feel on edge or frightened or threatened. And second of all, if another person wants to hurt me, they'll know I have a gun and they'll probably try and do something about it or even take it.
Yeah, well, so do you think there's an advantage in keeping your gun concealed?
Absolutely.
Like what kind of an advantage?
Well, if you are carrying in a holster, and if you have it concealed well enough, nobody's going to know if you have a gun or not.
Is there an advantage to that?
Well, yeah, because most people, if they're trying to attack you, don't expect you to have a gun.
Ah, very good. Why is it that you think our society, that there's a lot of people in our society, a lot of politicians and stuff, why do you think it is that they don't want us to have guns?
Well, they think that having legal access to guns encourages more people to kill a lot of people.
Do you believe that?
Well, I don't believe it. I don't believe that it encourages people to kill other people, but I do think it makes killing people a whole lot easier.
Well, you think so? I mean, well, maybe there's a possibility, but what is it that you think encourages people to hurt other people?
Oh, it's just human nature. Some people are just evil like that.
Yeah, some people are evil, and you know, if they have evil inside of them, it doesn't matter whether there's a gun available or not. They'll just, do you think maybe they try to use something else?
Well, if you've been paying attention to the last 15 years or so, there have been some times where people have tried to use bombs or knives to kill other people.
Well, there's been quite a few instances where they've used bombs and knives, hasn't there?
Yes.
Did the terrorists on 9/11 use any guns?
They used box cutters.
They didn't use a single gun, did they?
No, they used box cutters.
Yeah, and you know, you think about it, a lot of people get killed without guns. So really, it's just as easy if you're an evil person and you want to kill somebody, it's just as easy to kill somebody whether you have a gun or not. Would you agree?
Yes.
So, Sammy, what is it that the purpose of allowing citizens to own guns really is? What is it that you think, why do we have this Second Amendment?
Originally, it was intended for citizens to organize a militia to overthrow a tyrannical government, although that's probably not plausible now considering the government has drones.
Yeah, well, you know, it is kind of interesting to think about whether the citizens could do that. But you're exactly right. That's why the Second Amendment was put in the Constitution. And a lot of young men or women your age don't really understand what the Second Amendment is all about. You seem to understand that. What is it that you think most people think of the Second Amendment that are your age?
Well, most people, I think of the Second Amendment as put there so that we could defend ourselves if we needed to.
You think other people think that?
Well, pretty much everybody I know thinks that.
Really?
Except for some people that think it's a lot. Some people that think it's unnecessary.
Why do you think that there are people that way that think it's unnecessary?
Well, they believe that it ensures that criminals will be able to get their hands on guns.
Say that again?
They think that it ensures that evil people will be able to get their hands on guns.
Oh, they think the Second Amendment lets evil people get their hands on guns?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
There is a part, some truth to it. I mean, everybody's a law-abiding citizen until they're not.
It's true. But let me ask you this, though. Don't you think that evil people are going to get a gun, whether there's a law against it or not?
Well, there are some people that like to sell guns on the black market.
Well, there are some, but why is it that... Well, tell me this. What law do you think that politicians could pass that would keep guns out of the hands of evil people?
I think it comes down more on law enforcement's duty, because there is no law you can pass that can prevent people from getting guns. However, you can severely improve law enforcement to crack down on cases of private sales to criminals or black market.
How would you do that?
Well, I'm not a law enforcement officer, so I wouldn't know.
But you said something pretty interesting there that is kind of thought-provoking, and that is there's no law you could pass that would keep people that mean to do something evil from possessing a gun.
Right. There, you could just purchase it from somebody else. It doesn't even have to be from a dealer.
Well, wouldn't they kind of get it from their drug buddies?
Yes.
No law is going to prevent that, is it?
Well, we tried that with alcohol, and we tried that with drugs, but it didn't prevent either of those things from getting purchased.
Yeah, exactly. So any law against guns is not going to prevent bad people. So if we can't use a law to prevent bad people from getting guns, what do you think we should do?
Well, I just say make sure everybody is armed, or make sure that there's intense screening whenever you go into a place, like metal detectors or even frisks, if you can find a way to put that in without violating people's rights.
But the problem with metal detectors and intense screening is on the other side of that metal detector or screening device, it creates a certain type of a zone, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, gun-free zone.
Yeah, what do you think of gun-free zones?
Well, if you're able to screen every single person, ideally that would create a situation to where nobody has a gun.
But do you think that's possible?
Well, depending on how tough your screening is, there may be some people who may find a loophole.
Well, do you think, there are a lot of gun-free zones out there. And do you think that shootings happen in gun-free zones?
Yes.
How do you think that happens?
Well, one, most of these places like movie theaters have absolutely no screening whatsoever. And two, they know that because nobody is probably carrying a gun in there because they're law-abiding citizens, they know that they'll probably be able to shoot without any resistance.
Yeah, they'll be able to shoot without any resistance because the law-abiding citizens are obeying the sign that's posted on the building, aren't they?
Yes.
But are the bad guys obeying that sign?
Well, to be honest, if everybody obeyed a sign that says don't do crime, it'd be pretty easy to stop crime.
if they obeyed a sign that says don't do crime, yeah, but that's never going to happen, is it?
It's completely ludicrous.
So really, all kinds of screening procedures and metal detectors is really kind of creating a gun-free zone that's really not all that safe, right?
Well, if you're good enough at it, it will be safe.
What do you mean if you're good enough at it?
I said if you're in a gun-free zone and there's tight enough screening, then it probably would be safe.
You mean if it was really possible to not allow somebody on the premise with a gun?
Right.
But do you think that's possible?
Well, eventually there might be some person who may figure out a way to sneak one past others.
Absolutely. And then once somebody figures out how to sneak one past, then nobody in that whole place is safe, are they?
Nope.
Would they be safe if they had guns?
Well, there's always the element of surprise, so an armed gunman could probably kill one or two people, but not enough, because there will be other people with guns.
And the other people with guns would fight back?
Yes.
If you were one of those other people with guns, would you fight back?
Yes.
Well, good for you. So, let's get back to going shooting. What else is fun about shooting?
Well, just how it feels in your hands after you've pulled the trigger and it jerking your hand upwards.
The last time you and I went shooting, you used your Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm that I gave you, and you were hitting a lot of those steel targets, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I think I would hit every 5 out of 6 shots.
Yeah, there were a couple steel targets at 10 yards, and you were hitting about 5 out of every 6 or 5 out of every 7 shots.
Yes.
What do you think of shooting my AR-15s?
Well, my biggest problem with it is that your AR-15s are right-handed, and I'm a left-handed person, so sometimes I get empty shells on my skin, and it really hurts because it's really hot.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to get you a left-handed AR-15, aren't I?
Yeah.
They're out there. They exist. We'll set that as a goal to try to get you a left-handed AR-15. How does that sound?
Yeah, maybe.
So the people who are listening to this, how about young people that are your age, that are, you know, 18 or 19 or 20 years old, or even just slightly younger? What would you want to say to them about firearms?
Firearms are not the big scary boogeymen that the media makes them out to be.
Yeah, they're not. And what else would you say to them?
If you have the proper training, it's really not that hard to use one.
Why are they not the big scary boogeyman the media makes them out to be?
Well, because guns in the right hands can be beneficial to a person in need.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you tell young people to get out shooting?
Well, you don't have to, but I do recommend it. I do recommend it if you haven't tried it yet.
Awesome. Son, thanks for your time. Thanks for your very open and candid responses and thoughts about guns. All right. Many thanks to my son. You know, I was surprised by things like his feelings that, you know, a lot of guns makes it easier for bad people to get access to guns. You and I both know that that's false, that bad people are going to get access to guns whenever they want. But, you know, that's where he stands right now. That's kind of what he sort of thinks, although he kind of changed his mind a little bit as I was asking some more questions. But that's an area that I'll work on with him. I was pleased on his understanding of gun-free zones. He doesn't quite seem to get it, in my opinion, that you really cannot make a true gun-free zone, no matter how much screening, no matter how many metal detectors and all that. He doesn't understand the danger of a gun-free zone. Not quite. I don't think he quite grasps that, so we're going to work on that. But I am very pleased that he's got a good understanding of the Second Amendment, that he has a good understanding that police response time is just not there, and that you have to take responsibility for your own protection and your own protection of life. So I was real pleased about that. I was real pleased about his enjoyment for shooting, and I thought that there were some good things in there, and I thought that there were some things in there that I need to work on. So if you've never done this type of thing with your family members, you know, even if you don't do a podcast, just sit and have a 20-minute or 30-minute conversation, open-ended conversation, and don't tell them what kind of questions that you're going to ask them. Just start asking them questions like I did with my son Spencer, and I put it here on the Handgun World podcast. I think that there's hope. There's hope for his generation, at least those that have been raised with parents who are firearms enthusiasts. With my son, there's definitely a lot of hope. I think he gets it. He gets the idea as to why we carry and why we should carry. I was pleased to hear him say that he wants to carry when he turns 21. That's great. I'm going to make sure that he gets lots of training. And by the way, I'm going to make sure that he gets lots of training not from me. Don't train your kids. I mean, teach them safety. Teach them safety, but don't train them on how to use their gun. Have somebody else train them. I'm not a big fan of mom and dad doing the training because you know how young people are with mom and dad, especially teenagers. You know how they are with mom and dad. They don't want to listen to what mom and dad says, right? Have somebody else take them to another class and have somebody else teach them. I've talked to John Payne from Suarez International before, and I think I'm going to have my son Spencer probably in the springtime or in the summer. I'm going to have him go through one of John Payne's entry-level classes, or I'll find an entry-level class maybe here in the San Antonio area or something like that to get him into. But probably like CRG1 through Suarez International or some of the others I'll get him into. I don't know if you guys remember, I gave him a Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. That's his handgun. Every once in a while, I put it in my holster, but it's earmarked for him. That's going to be his starter handgun, Shield 9mm, and I think he's going to, well, he already does really enjoy it. He was real good with it. The last outing, the last shooting that we did, he was excellent, and I was pleased. He talked about that in the interview. So do that with your kids. Talk to them. And if they don't mind, you know, put it on a recording and just save the recording. You know, save it now. And then, you know, do another one the following year and kind of see if their minds change a little bit and see where they go with the questions that you ask them. And when they start to carry, what I want you to do for them is do the same thing that you do for yourself. Get them some protection. Get them some legal protection. As you know, if you end up in a gunfight, or even if you don't have to use your gun, you can still get arrested even if a gun is involved. Again, you don't have to fire it, but if a gun is involved, you could get arrested trying to defend yourself. If you remember back in episode 381, Paul Lathrop of the Polite Society podcast, and you remember that terrible story, he had to spend $12,500 just to get his defense started. And how many of us have 12 grand we can just write a check for right now to get our legal defense started? Don't carry a gun without some kind of legal defense protection. The Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network is a sponsor of the Self-Defense Radio Network. They're an affiliate. We're an affiliate for them. Excuse me. For only $135 a year, you don't have to spend 12 grand to get your defense started. You could do everything right, folks. You could do everything right and still get arrested. So Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, armedcitizensnetwork.org. When you sign up, please use the tracking code Paul. Just tell them Paul sent you. You can call them, or you can go to armedcitizensnetwork.org. Just please use the tracking code Paul. If you tell them that you heard it on the Handgun World podcast or the Self-Defense Radio Network, they'll figure it out. But you will help us out. We do get the network makes some money whenever you do that. Paul is the best tracking code to use when you contact them. I am a member. I have been for over 3 years, and I'll continue to renew it for as long as I continue carrying guns, which is probably going to be the rest of my life. Quick break, and I'll come back and talk about some guns. I'm back. You know, for the last 4 or 5 years, I've been having a lot of fun testing out different guns. And because I'm not a really super popular gun industry insider, You know, I'm not like some of the gun professionals that have all these weapons sent to them for testing and evaluation. I'm not that lucky. I'm not that fortunate. I wish. I get holsters and things sent to me. And, of course, Jason Christensen at Concealment Solutions, they're a sponsor of the Handgun World podcast. Pretty much the only holsters I use now. ConcealmentSolutions.com. 10% off if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld. 10% off if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld at Concealment Solutions. But I don't get guns sent to me. So I've been doing it on my own. So let's see. Let's talk about some of the guns that I've tested, what I think of them. I've sort of come full circle. And let's talk about that. When I first started buying guns, and again, I buy them, test them. If I like them, I keep them. If I don't like them, I sell them off. Yeah, it costs some money. You guys have been so generous helping me out that I've been able to afford to do it. You make your Amazon store purchases at my Amazon store at handgunworld.com. That helps support me financially. You guys have been signing up for the Shooters Club. You've been coming to my training classes, you know, things like that. You've been using my sponsor, Concealment Solutions. You guys have been signing up at the network sponsor, Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. All that's been helping me out. And hopefully it's been benefiting you because I get to talk about the different guns. So I went through the 1911 phase for a while. And I had a Sig Sauer RCS 1911 45 ACP, which I really, really liked. Really, really liked. I don't own that anymore. I also had a Desert Eagle, Magnum Research Desert Eagle 1911, a few years back. I don't own that anymore because I don't have any 1911s right now, and I'll talk about that. Not because I hate 1911s. That's a label that got stuck to me that I don't know why I ever got that label, but I don't hate 1911s. But I did the 1911 thing. Now, when I first started 1911s, I had Kimbers. This was about 6 or 7 years ago. I had Kimbers. And I got to say, the Kimbers were not bad. They ran okay. They ran, you know, fairly well. I had a Kimber Target Match, which was a limited edition. And then I had the Kimber Raptor. The Raptor 2, I believe it was. Both all-steel, full-size, 5-inch 1911s. They were fine. They were fine. There was a few things I didn't care for. The limited capacity, 45. The super heavy gun, which I didn't want to carry a gun that heavy. And, of course, I didn't want a gun with a thumb safety on it that I had to worry about disengaging in order to save my life. I just didn't feel comfortable. Some people feel comfortable and they've trained, you know, tens of thousands of reps and draws disengaging that safety. And if that's you, that's great. So after the 1911s, I decided to try Glocks. And I bought a Glock 34 and I bought a Glock 35. This was way back when. Loved them. Loved the Glock 34, Glock 35. Ended up actually selling the Glock 35 because I bought them both for competition, and I had to make a choice. I knew I couldn't keep both of them, and of course, 9mm made a lot more sense for a competition because it's less money. It's less money on the lots of ammo that you use when you compete. So that's pretty much kind of what started me into striker-fired guns. I guess let's go back a little farther. The very first gun I ever owned was a Sig Sauer P226. Nice gun. Real nice gun. Again, too heavy for me to carry. Too heavy for my liking. I know some people carry a Sig P226, but it wasn't for me. And at that time, I didn't care for the double action trigger on it. So then I moved to the 1911s and then to Glocks. Well, Glocks got a little boring for me. And Smith & Wesson hit the scene pretty hard with their M&P. Actually, before that, I believe Springfield hit the scene with the XD series. So I bought a Springfield XD45. And I liked the 45. I was still kind of liking 45. You know, I was liking that myth of the one-shot stop. That was I bought into that myth. I bought into that one-shot stop myth a long time ago. So I got myself a Springfield XD45. I liked it. I actually had a little bit of trigger work done on it because, again, that was going to be my competition pistol. I was not carrying a gun on my person, on my body, every day at that point. But after about 3 or 4 months, I realized I was not going to carry this gun. And I started to develop the philosophy that I don't want to have a gun if I'm not going to carry it. I don't like to own guns that I won't carry. So the Springfield 45 was gone. And then M&P was also, Smith & Wesson was hitting the scene pretty heavily with the M&P series. So I bought a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm shortly after they first came out. Not too long after they first came out with the M&P series. And I liked it. I really liked it. I noticed the similarities between it and a Glock 17. And some of you might say, similarities? What are you talking about? Well, not the ergonomics. The ergonomics are a whole lot different. I really did appreciate the ergonomics of the M&P. But the internals were pretty similar. In fact, you know, I don't know if you know this. You can take the recoil spring assembly, the recoil spring and guide rod out of a Glock 17, and you can drop it right into a full-size Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm. It'll run just fine. Somebody told me that one time, and I decided to try it, and I did, and it worked. How about that? So, you know, I kind of thought, well, both of these guns are very similar to a Glock. They're both striker-fired. If you look at the internals, there's a whole lot of similarities. XDs, M&Ps, look at the internals of those. Look, compare them to a Glock. So I thought, well, one's a Croatian Glock and the other's an American Glock. And they're not whole that much different than Glocks other than the ergonomics. I did, in fact, really enjoy the ergonomics of the M&P. I thought it was a much more ergonomically friendly pistol. So I had the M&P for a while, and I used it. I just didn't like the trigger. Couldn't stand the trigger on the early M&Ps. Just not my thing. Got rid of it. Probably shouldn't, but actually, in hindsight, I'm glad I did, because I don't think the early version M&Ps are as good as today's version of the M&Ps. Today's versions have better barrels, and they have better triggers. And I think those two improvements are very good. So, no more M&P, no more XD. Got rid of those. And let's see, what did I get shortly after that? Oh, I bought a Glock 19. And so I used that Glock 19, and I ran the Glock 19 and the Glock 34. I ran them both. And I started carrying with the Glock 19. And shortly after I bought the Glock 19, I bought a Carr PM9. And so those quickly became my carry guns. Those were now the guns that I was carrying every day. I was using the Glock 34 as my competition gun because, after all, Glock's marketing said practical tactical, and it was the rage. It was the big thing. If you were a striker-fired enthusiast and you wanted to compete and you wanted to be competitive in SSP division or USPSA production division, you had to have a Glock 34. So I got a Glock 34, and that was my competition gun. But I started carrying the Glock 19 and the Carr Arms PM9. Those were my carry guns. And I liked them. I liked them both. Still like them both. Still great guns. And I really started liking the Glock 19. It fit me. It fits my hand. I have relatively long fingers. I have slightly above average size hands. So I got no problem operating a Glock. No problem. I know for some of you out there, your hand size might be a little different, and Glocks might be a challenge for you. I get that. So then I started carrying the Carr PM9. Well, then I sort of got a little bored because, you know, it was just, you know, the same old, and that went by for about a couple of years. But I decided as a backup that I needed to get another Glock 19. So I got another Glock 19, and that kind of served as a backup. And then I kind of got the bright idea, well, you know, how about if I try a Glock 26, because, you know, it's a little bit smaller. So I got a Glock 26, and I thought, well, it's okay. I owned it for a little while, and then I sold it off. I thought, nah, there's not as much of an advantage. And I found myself putting the magazine extensions to rest my pinky on the Glock 26. And by the time I did that, it was getting pretty close to the same grip length as a Glock 19. Not exactly, a little bit shorter. And yeah, the barrel was shorter. And yes, it was a little bit easier gun to conceal, but not that much easier. You know, with the right holster and the right belt, for me, again, this is for me, with the right holster and the right belt, I can conceal a Glock 19 pretty much as easily as a Glock 26. However, I'm carrying a Glock 26 right now today as I'm dictating this podcast just because I can. I like to be a little bit different. And I can. So that's what I'm doing. But my first Glock 26, I sold it off. And I was back to my Glock 19 and my Car PM9. Those were my two primary guns for a real long time. Then I decided that I wanted to give 1911s a try, but I wanted to give smaller 1911s a try. Because I didn't like the big 5-inch all-steel government model size 1911s. So I bought small 1911s. I bought the Sig Sauer RCS, which is kind of an upgraded version of the 1911 C3. Aluminum frame, lighter weight, 8 rounds in the mag, 1 in the gun for a 9-round gun. If I bought the mags that came with it, I believe, were 7-round mags. I guess it was 7-round. I'm sorry. 7 rounds in the mag. 1 in the chamber. 8 rounds. And then I bought the Desert Eagle 4-inch barrel, commander size. And that had a little bit longer grip. So that was, I believe, an 8-round pistol. And those were my two 1911s for a while. If you remember, I did that whole solid year here on the Handgun World podcast of analyzing 1911s versus striker fired. You can go back to some of my older episodes and you can find those and you can listen to them. What I learned was that if I practiced and I trained, I learned what a lot of people learn, that a 1911 is a very viable carry gun, very viable self-defense gun, if, and this is a big if you're willing to get married to the platform. You have to get married to it. Switching between it and striker fire was a little difficult for me. Only once in a year, did I, during training, forget to disengage the safety. But that was during training and practice when I was concentrating on making sure that I disengage the thumb safety. Sometimes we don't get to think and concentrate in a gunfight, in the high-stress encounter of a life-saving gunfight. So because we don't get to think and concentrate, because our stress level sometimes gets way so high that we can only react and not think, for me, the thumb safety wasn't going to work. For some of you who listen to this podcast, it works because you're married to the 1911 platform. And that's all you carry, and that's all you shoot. And I believe if you're going to carry a 1911 for self-defense, that should be all you carry. And that should be what you shoot 90% of the time. The ergonomics of 1911s, I found, were fantastic. The single action trigger, I found, was fantastic. The carryability, I tell you, that Sig Sauer RCS was a sweet gun to carry. It was so flat and relatively light that I had no problem concealing that with a Concealment Solutions Black Mamba CE holster inside the waistband. No problem. But I realized I didn't want to marry the 1911 platform. So goodbye, Sig Sauer RCS, and goodbye, Desert Eagle Magnum Research 45 1911s. Then the single stack 9 craze bit me. I got bit by the single stack 9mm bug. And that bug, I'm still bit by the single stack 9mm. So all of a sudden, now I had to get into the single stack 9mm. And I kind of bought and sold and tested and evaluated a lot of single stack 9mm pistols. Of course, the very first single stack 9mm pistol I ever owned was that Carr PM9. And I still think today, the Carr PM9 is still one of the absolute best 9mm single stack pistols you can buy and own. The trigger takes a little getting used to, but once you get used to the trigger, it's easier than shooting a double action revolver trigger, in my opinion. It's a sweet gun. But I had to have some others because, after all, that's what I was doing, was experimenting. So besides the Carr PM9, I got a Smith & Wesson Shield. And I got one of the early versions with a thumb safety, because that's all that was out at first when I bought one. Loved it. Absolutely loved the gun. Just didn't love the thumb safety. And I didn't want to carry it with the thumb safety disengaged, because Murphy's Law, if I train with no thumb safety and I accidentally somehow engage the thumb safety, and of course, we got to think about Murphy's Law, right? Anything that can happen probably will happen at some point. I thought, you know what? This is not going to work either, because if I accidentally engage that thumb safety and I don't know it, and I haven't trained to disengage the thumb safety, it could cost me my life. So that didn't work. So I got rid of that shield. As a matter of fact, that shield we gave away to a very deserving Shooters Club member when we ran a contest on the Shooters Club. So then I decided I needed to get a Springfield XDS 9mm, because, hey, you know what? Everybody else was buying a Springfield XDS. So why shouldn't I? So I got a Springfield XDS. Got a pretty good deal on a Springfield XDS over at Sparks Firearms. And loved it. Shot it. Did some reviews on it. Thought the gun was great. I'm not a big fan of grip safeties, but everything else I liked. And by the way, I had a student one time come to one of our classes that Ben Branham and myself were teaching. And during a drill, the student didn't get a good enough grip on the XDS and didn't disengage the grip safety, couldn't fire his gun. And I thought, you know, in a fight, my grip could get compromised on that pistol. And you might say, oh, come on, Bob, it's a training issue. Just like a 1911 thumb safety, it's a training issue. If you have a compromised grip on any gun that has a grip safety, if the bad guy's tugging at your arm, and for some reason, or he's got a hold of your hand, but you can still grab your gun, but maybe you can't get a really nice, good firing grip on the gun, and you can't completely depress the grip safety, that could cause a problem. And when I saw it happen to a student in a class, I thought, oh, okay. Maybe a gun with a grip safety, for carry purposes, is not for me. So goodbye, Springfield XDS. Again, a Shooters Club member. Ben and I ran a contest on the Shooters Club. Aren't we generous? If you're a Shooters Club member, you enjoy all kinds of benefits. Over 60 videos that Ben Branham and I have produced. Excellent instructional videos for only $75 a year or $8 a month. And sometimes we do things like give away guns, holsters, classes. We've given away all those to Shooters Club members. So anyway, goodbye Springfield XDS 9mm to a Shooters Club member. Liked the gun, but wasn't for me. So I was still bit by that single stack 9mm bug. And then all of a sudden Glock comes out with a Glock 42. Oh, wow, finally a single stack Glock. Well, I mean, the Glock 36 was out for years. But finally, a single-stack Glock that was not a 45. I bought the 42. Had a bunch of problems with it at first. I thought, oh boy, did I make a mistake. First time I bought a Glock, I made a mistake. Sent it back to Glock. Glock made it right. And it's run flawlessly ever since. Still have it. It's in my safe right now. Occasionally it gets carried by me as a pocket gun. It's also a great gun to teach new shooters on how to shoot a handgun, because it doesn't recoil much. 380 ammo has come down a little bit and I've stocked up. So it's a great gun to put into a new shooter's hands. Not much recoil. Really fun gun to shoot. It's small, so just about anybody can grip the gun. Real nice. Then, about a year later, Glock, finally, way too late in the game, finally decides to come out with a single stack 9mm. I jumped all over one, got a Glock 43. Not at first. The price was way too high. Steve Sparks from Sparks Firearms called me and when they first came out and asked me if I wanted to buy it, and I said no because the price was too high. I waited a while till it came down to a reasonable Glock price, and then I bought one. I carry it a lot today whenever I want to downsize. And, of course, all along I had been carrying my Glock 19 as well. It was still my primary carry weapon, Glock 19. But I had the Glock 43 and the Glock 42 and the Kar PM9. And, oh, by the way, I had to get involved in the Pocket 380 craze as well. I had a Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380. Thought it was okay, but not great. Got rid of it. Got the Kar P380. Fantastic. Kar P380. Fantastic. I think it's the best pocket 380 you can buy. Hands down. That's just my personal opinion. You might disagree. That's okay. If you disagree, you're welcome to disagree with me on this show. I like disagreement. Matter of fact, email me or voicemail me. My voicemail is 210-646-1727. I'm open to all comments. 210-646-1727. Send me a voicemail or send me an email. I like the Kar Arms P380 pocket pistol. Had a Ruger LCP for a while, but even though the Kar P380 cost a whole lot more, I think it's worth it. So when I compare the Ruger LCP to the Kar P380, I'm looking at them both, and I was shooting them both, and the recoil was better on the Kar P380. Didn't like the recoil on the Ruger LCP. I thought, forget it. Got rid of the Ruger LCP. I might consider getting one of the new Ruger LCPs with the better trigger and the better sights now. I'm thinking about that, maybe adding one of those to my Pocket 380, but I don't carry a Pocket 380 that much anymore. So between the Glock 42 and the Kar P380, I'm pretty well set on 380 pistols. So then decided to try the Glock 43. I like the Glock 43. The Glock 43 recoils a little too much for what I think it should, but it's not unmanageable for me. I can manage it. Not the slightest bit unmanageable. And it's 9mm. And guess what? I've come full circle. Back to the Glock 19. Back to Glock pistols because they feel nice to me. Yeah, believe it or not, I said that. Glock pistols feel nice to me. Now, I've made some changes in a couple of Glock 19s that I own. I've gotten rid of the finger grooves. I've had Chris from Citadel Armory put on some real nice texturing and undercut the trigger guard to make it fit my hand a little better. I like the trigger of a Glock. I happen to like the grip angle of a Glock. Yeah, I happen to like it. Look, folks, when your sights are on target, they're on target. It doesn't matter what your grip angle is. Just put your sights on target, line them up, do what you're supposed to do, and the shot's going to go where it's supposed to go. Period. It's called training. It's called shooting. I got a gazillion Glock magazines. My Glocks are incredibly reliable. So with my modifications, they're great for me. The cool thing about the Glock 43, no finger grooves. I like it. People say the Glock Generation 5 is not going to have any finger grooves. I may have to get one of those once they're out and they're proven to be reliable. So, I've sort of come full circle. Now, you know, most of you know I've recently added a Sig Sauer Legion, P229 Legion 9mm. Wow. I wanted to get back into double action guns, you know, double action, single action guns. And when I had a chance to dry fire that P229 Legion at Sparks Firearms one day, I thought, you know, this just might do it. This might get me back into double action guns. And of course, you know, running a double action gun is quite a bit different than striker fire, but at least there's no safeties I have to worry about on this SIG. That's what I like. No safeties, no grip safeties, no thumb safeties, nothing. Just press the trigger and it goes bang. I like that. Now, if a person buys the single action SIGs, of course, then you got the thumb safety, but I don't do single action guns anymore with thumb safeties. I already explained why I don't want to do single. I don't want to carry single action. I compete with them, but I'm not going to carry them. So, full circle again. Back to the very first type of handgun I owned, a Sig Sauer. Double action, single action, P229. Well, my first gun was a 226, but pretty close to the same gun. So, Glock 19s, Sig Sauer P229. Those are my go-to guns. And a Glock 43 or a Shield. That's it. It's all you find in my holster these days. The Shield or the Glock 43. And a Glock 19 Sig Sauer P229 Legion. Yes, folks, the Legions are worth the money. It's not all marketing hype. All the extra upgrades, they're worth the money. And no, I don't represent SIG in any way. I just talk about on this show what I use and what I like. And I let you, the listener, hear about it. So there you have it. That's my history with testing and evaluating guns. And it's been a long road, but I think I've now, after many, many hours, many thousands of dollars that I don't really wish to admit how much it is. It's okay. My life is worth it. My life is worth it. And I hope that you feel that your life is worth making the kind of commitment to find out the right kind of gun, the right kind of ammo, holster, and belt, and everything, which is all part of your concealed carry system. Well, that's all, folks. That's it for this episode. Hopefully you got something out of it. And I'd really love to hear your iTunes comments, by the way, folks. I've received a lot of them, but I'd like to... I'm sure there's several of you that have not put a comment yet. So if you use iTunes to get this podcast, go back to the iTunes feed where you find it and leave me a review. I would love to get that. iTunes review. And please also remember handgunworld.com. Check out all the show notes. If you forget the tracking code for our sponsors, go to the show notes for every single episode. You'll find them at handgunworld.com. Ben Branham and I are going to be teaching a lot of cool classes coming up. San Antonio, January. Houston, February. Dallas, April. Utah in May. Illinois in June. Ohio in August. Sioux Falls, South Dakota in August. Maybe Washington State in July. And a couple of other cool ones that we're working on. Check them all out. You can get discounts on all the classes at selfdefenseradio.net. At that website, selfdefenseradio.net, the password is SDRN, all lowercase. And again, if you forget this, go to the show notes at handgunworld.com. SDRN, you get discounts on any class that Ben Branham and I teach next year. And you get discounts on the Shooters Club as well. Selfdefenseradio.net. So with all that said, thanks for listening to this episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.